Randall, I'm going to co-opt a question that we used to use in my old podcast, but I'm going to sports it up, okay?
Okay.
So without any prep, if you could have dinner with any three sports celebrities, living or dead, who would it be and why?
Oh, man. I guess I would say Babe Ruth. We would have a lot of food. It would be probably a party, right? I would probably say, this is hard, Sam.
Hard question.
This is up for, I mean, you know what? I'm going to go another Yankee, Mickey Mantle, because we're going to keep this party rolling, right? Because whatever Babe Ruth did, I'm sure Mickey Mantle did tenfold, right?
And I guess you'd have to triple it out with A-Rod, like another Yankee legend. just A-Rod, Babe Ruth, and Mantle. I like that. I came up with three for this, but I had time to think about it, so that's not kind of fair. So I picked Thurman Munson, so I could have somebody be kind of angry and grumpy. I picked Jurgen Klopp, who, while prepping this story, I had to listen to him talk a bunch in the audio, and God, I could just listen to Jurgen talk forever. And maybe this is recency bias, but current New York Knicks Josh Hart. Maybe just me and Josh.
Okay.
No, I think that's just recency bias. So I'm going to say Jeff Van Gundy is my third one. Give me Klopp, Munson, and Van Gundy. All of us together, and then we could have lunch. Yeah, that's my three.
So you're going with two really famous for being coaches, right? I know Klopp was a player. Was he not?
He was a bad player, but he was indeed a player, yes.
Okay. Yeah. Van Gundy probably played in high school and maybe college. And then Munson. Yeah.
And then Thurman Munson. Yeah.
He was replace the captain Munson of the team, right?
He was the captain. I could replace A-Rod with Munson if you want and do a whole A-Rod thing. Just bring A-Rod back into mine too. I do think this question is hard, and it's kind of unfair for me to spring it on you without any warning.
Yeah, it is. It's very difficult. But now I know.
Now I know how bad all my interview people feel when I used to do this to them every week on the Unicast. However, folks, we are here. It's a bittersweet episode for me. Season 1, episode 4. Oh, it's time to talk about the slip. Randall, let me ask you a question as I sit here and drink this. I'm going to do some product placement. You ever seen this product before? This is kombucha. No. Do you like kombucha?
Oh. It's growing on me. Mm-hmm. Initially, I wasn't a huge fan, but the more I try it, the more I tend to enjoy it.
I'm so happy you said that, because the analogy I'm going to make here is that soccer is a little bit like the kombucha of sports. I think when you start getting into soccer and you tell people you're getting into soccer, they're like, what? Is something wrong? Is this like a health thing that you need? But as time goes on, I sort of appreciate it. And also, the more you talk about it, the more pretentious people think you are.
That's for sure. That is absolutely for sure.
So, yeah, I was thinking a lot about that as I was prepping. Soccer, professional soccer, the kombucha of sports. And it's also, according to one of my favorite soccer podcasts, the Men in Blazers, it is America's sport of the future, and it has been since 1977. So, Randall, I'm a big soccer guy, and I want to let you jump in here. What was your sort of – you knew about this story because we've been talking soccer, but where do you play soccer today? Do you like watching soccer still? Do you rank it high in your sports watching pantheon?
The thing I like about soccer, and specifically the Premier League, is that it's on TV in the morning on Saturdays.
It's the best.
There's really no other sports to watch, right? And I enjoy coming downstairs, because usually the rest of my family is asleep, and having the TV to myself, and I can watch a match. And that's, you know, you led me to soccer, as you well know. In mm-hmm. fact, I do have my Liverpool coffee mug here while we're talking, that you gifted me. So you know, and I follow Liverpool because of you, because I didn't have a team and I figured, well, I might as well just follow the one Sammy's following, right? Why not? So yeah, but that and the reason why I was able to do that is because really it was Saturday mornings were free. I didn't have anyone else bothering me and I could watch a match pretty much from start to finish. And that is very difficult to do in my household in the evening.
I think that you're actually really spot on here. And I hadn't even really thought about this, but I think, you know, getting into soccer, there is, if you're the kind of guy who wakes up early and likes their mornings and you're mm-hmm. a sports fan, it was a godsend. As when I first got into soccer, the idea that I could wake up at 7:30 on a Saturday to watch even teams I didn't care about, like, oh, yeah. what is this? Nottingham Forest, Watford? Sure, sign me up. 7:30 on a Saturday. Let's go. and I do think that, and it's interesting you say the choosing your team thing, because soccer, I think for a lot of people, if you get into soccer, it's one of the few chances, maybe as an older person or as an adult, to get to choose a team that you like sure. from scratch. A lot of the teams that I like in my lifetime were sort of foisted upon me, mm-hmm. right? Either by location or people in my life or friends or just the popular teams at the time. Soccer is a nice opportunity to be like, what do I like about a team? Yeah. Why would I root for any particular team?
Sure, sure. And well, how did you decide on Liverpool?
It's a great question. When I got into soccer, it was right around the time that Liverpool had won their first Champions League. I didn't know that, but I knew okay. that they were one of the more popular teams. And
yeah,
I think we talk about him in the episode. My buddy Dano, shout out to Dano. Me and him kind of got into it same time. He was a Man U guy. I was a Liverpool guy. And the funny story is when I first chose teams, I was in between Liverpool and Chelsea, right?
Okay.
And I kind of bounced back and forth. Those were my two landing spaces. I didn't want to be a Manchester fan. I didn't want to get in on Arsenal because I feel like there was some reason why I was down on Arsenal. Someone was telling me, like, no, you don't want to be an Arsenal fan. And I was like, are you sure? All right, fine. Okay. And I don't know why they told me that. They just like, don't buy into Arsenal. And I was like, okay. And I think I chose Chelsea initially. And then as I started watching more games, like within a couple months, I was like, I feel like I'm more interested in this other team. It's kind of what happened to me with the Bills. I grew up around all these New York Giants fans. Yeah. And then I just kept feeling myself sort of naturally caring more about the other team that was on TV. Okay. I was like, I don't care about this Giants team. I wish I did for all your sakes, but I just don't, right? I guess I'm more interested in this.
Yeah.
And then, of course, if you listen to the there's the musical theater connection, which I found out later on, you know, they're the main song that Liverpool plays, mm-hmm. their song You'll Never Walk Alone is like a Rodgers and Hammerstein song. I think it's from, yeah. I forget exactly what play it's from. And you'll never
alone. You'll never alone.
Liverpool is well known for their history with their music and connections to music. The Pink Floyd song Fearless actually has audio of the Liverpool cops singing You'll Never Walk Alone at the very end of it.
Oh, okay.
Which is something I found out afterwards and also sure. was just like, yep, solidified my choice yeah, that I've yeah. made the right decision. You know, I think that's actually the thing about Liverpool is as I went farther down the road with this team, as I got more and more invested in them from 2007 to, you know, it's almost been 20 years now, getting to close to 20 years that I've been supporting yeah. this team now, which sounds crazy to me. God, I feel old. I feel more and more as I watched them that I made the right choice. And today's story, April 27th, 2014, known as The Slip, featuring maybe my single all-time favorite soccer player, the main person of our today's story, the person who dragged me into it, Steven Gerrard. This sad, awful moment as a fan, I think I say it in the episode, is probably what solidified this as like something that I cared about and actively was on the ride for and was going to spend my sports time invested in this team. And so far it has paid out correctly for me. I feel very pleased with my decision. I just want to point out one more thing then, if that's the case, because right around the time that I was getting into Liverpool and European soccer, I also watched a fantastic documentary, and I cannot tell anyone where to find it anymore. It's hard to find, maybe YouTube. It was about a New York soccer team from the 1970s known as the New York Cosmos. The documentary is called Once in a Lifetime. And again, it's right in that wheelhouse. If you can look up New York Cosmos, Once in a Lifetime, you can find it. That was another thing that I was sort of engaged in around the soccer time that I was like, oh, this is cool too. Like America's got some soccer stuff. And later on, we can talk about America's connection to soccer. Yeah. But right around the same time when I was getting into Liverpool, I watched this New York Cosmos documentary. And I think it sort of fleshed out the idea of how important soccer was everywhere else in the world. And how America was sort of slow to embrace it.
For sure.
But we can talk more about that later on. Let's get into the bulk of this week's episode, Randall, as we travel back to 2014. Liverpool, Chelsea. Let's just call it the slip. So, Randall, this is the first time probably since I stopped doing the old podcast that I had to sit down and do research for something for a podcast.
Sure.
It's been like almost a couple years now, probably since I've done it. And man, did I forget how deep I can get when I start looking into something, man.
Right, right. It's so true. It's like you take a topic and all of a sudden you're down the rabbit hole.
Oh, it's
instantly.
This is such a sad story today, and I know that I have this bad feeling that as we go on through this series, people are going to get this impression that I only talk about like sad or traumatic or tragic stories. But I do say that while this is certainly the single most depressed, sad, upset, like physically angry I've ever been at a sporting event, this game, The Slip, on April 27th, 2014, between Chelsea and Liverpool, it's also probably the most important game in terms of me being a soccer fan, and really it probably solidified me as a lifetime soccer fan. This moment, this time, this place. Before we get into oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. And I'll get into why.
Yeah.
And
okay.
What it meant to me.
I'm interested to hear that.
Yeah. Before we get into it though, I wanted to start with something for you, Randall.
Sure.
Because I was thinking about this. Liverpool was a team that I got into late in life. It wasn't one of my original teams.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about Steven Gerrard today, he's like the most important player for me on this team because he was the first athlete on Liverpool that I loved, the first player that I was like, oh, this guy, this is the reason that I'm in on this team and this.
Yeah, sport. Yeah.
And I was trying to think for you, for all the teams that you like, what's a player, who's like the first athlete that you can think of that you, growing up, like, this is the guy, this is the why I like this team?
Oh, that's a good question. But I think if I go back now, this isn't a team that I follow today, but the first athlete that I fell in love with or was like, this is my guy, was Willie Stargell of the We Are Family Pittsburgh Pirates. Yes. He was a Sarge, right? Wasn't that, he had the amazing batting stance with the bat. He twirled it a lot. And, you know, he was a home run hitter, power hitter, and they were really, really good at the time. So, I kind of fell in love with Willie Stargell. Again, I kind of liked the Pirates at that point in my life because I was like 7 years old and their uniforms were cool to me then.
Yeah.
And Willie Stargell was the beast. So Willie Stargell.
The easy answer for me as a kid would have been Derek Jeter. It was right in the Yankee wheelhouse at 96. I was 10 years old when the Yankees won. Jeter was a rookie. He would have certainly been the guy. The hipster answer is Ken Griffey Jr. Because in 1995, Ken Griffey Jr. beat the Yankees in the ALDS. I watched it with my old man.
Speed the stretch. And the 0-1 pitch on the way to Edgar Martinez. Swung on the line down the left field line for a base hit. Here comes Joy. Here is Jr. to third base. They're going to wave him in. The throw to the plate will be late. The Mariners are going to play for the American League championship.
And I watched grown men scream at a television for the first time in my life. So I would say Griffey was probably one of those first athletes too as well that I'm like, oh, this guy, he's amazing, right?
Right. He was incredible.
Randall, I got to ask you because, and I don't mean to pull the curtain back too far. You were not always a soccer guy, if I remember correctly. You got into soccer a little bit
later. I think I had been into Liverpool for a couple of years, and I think you sort of casually approached me about your growing interest in soccer.
Yeah.
How did that sort of come about?
Question.
Yeah.
You know, it was, I was thinking about this topic when with Liverpool, because I believe this was kind of when I first started to watch, because when I went back and looked at some of the things with regards to this story, I know all these players, right, yeah, from that team. And so I was thinking about that. My interest grew from you because I remember you had a Steven Gerrard kit
that you would
wear occasionally. And, you know, I'm like, what is this? You know, what are you wearing? And you told me, oh, it's Liverpool Premier League, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I love sports, but I was never really into soccer. So I started to watch Saturday and Sunday mornings, and, you know, I might as well, I don't have a rooting interest in any of these teams, so I might as well just follow the one you follow. Why not? At least we have something to talk about, right? And so I did. And I was thinking about that because when I look at when this happened, you know, in 2014, right? Mm-hmm. I found that surprising because that means I've been watching the Premier League for like 10 years now. And that doesn't seem possible.
It doesn't. So,
I
was thinking about that too. I started watching Premier League soccer sort of by accident. It was in 2007. I was living in an apartment with my buddy Dano. Shout out to Dano. I'm going to bring him back up a little bit later. That's a name to remember, Dano. But we used to watch soccer because it was just on cable. We lived in like a little like rat hole apartment that we paid like $170 a month for. Like it was on the street where the cops were showing up every night. But we didn't have cable, so we just had whatever cable channels we could pick up on like the internet or through a digital antenna. But one of the things we got at the time was FSN, an old sports channel, Soccer Nation or Fox Soccer Network. So we would catch all of these random soccer games, and we started sort of just, you know, jumping in and sort of laughing at it at first, laughing like Americans do, like, soccer, use your hands, boys. Oh, what is this? Oh, yeah.
Open wide for some soccer! The Continental Soccer Association is coming to Springfield. It's all here. Fast kicking, low scoring, and ties. You bet.
But as time went on, we started sort of, you know, actively caring. And I think Liverpool, there's a lot of reasons I love Liverpool, and I could get into many of them. A lot of them have to do with history, narrative, the culture, the sociology around the team, the sociology of Liverpool as a city. The fact that
you're going deep. Yeah.
Going deep. The fact that they have all of these amazing songs and chants and this very deep and troubled and sad but beautiful history. But the reality is, if we're bringing it back to the core of why I'm here today, it's Steven Gerrard. Steven Gerrard represented the player that just opened up soccer to me in a way that I didn't expect. Go ahead.
I wanted to correct something that I said earlier before you get into this story.
Sure.
I called Willie Stargell the Sarge. He was not the Sarge. That was Gary Matthews of the Cubs. Willie Stargell was Pops. So I have to correct myself.
Before people get on you.
Exactly. I don't want anyone to say, wait a minute.
Move this man! Move!
That was Gary Matthews. But Willie Stargell was Pops. Sarge just happens to rhyme with his name or is similar to Stargell. Anyway, you go ahead with your story, Sam.
Well, first off, this is always a hard part for me. I don't know how much people know about soccer or the Premier League. If you're listening to this, you either know a lot about it and you're going to ignore what I'm going to tell you for the next 2 minutes, or you have no idea what I'm talking about, and I'm going to try and make this as easy as possible. So, in terms of the Premier League, English football goes all the way back to 1888. I'm not going to talk about that far back.
Wow. Okay.
But what I will say is the Football League in England goes back all the way to 1888, and until 1992, it was simply known as the Football League. In 1992, the Football League broke away and became what we consider the Premier League today. And since 1992, the Premier League is and remains the world's most watched sports league in 643, 643 homes around the globe, with a potential audience of 4.7 billion people per year. for people who don't know anything about soccer, you still might know these four names. We're considered the top four teams in English football history: Arsenal, Chelsea, Manchester United, and of course, Liverpool. Since about 2000, you would include teams like Tottenham Hotspur and Manchester City in what is now considered the Big Six, the top six biggest teams in the Premier League who tend to be at the top all the time. Now, I'm going to give you some really quick facts. From 1892 to 2018, Liverpool won 18 top flight titles. 11 of them came between 1973 and 1990, what is considered to be the Liverpool golden era, the greatest era. And then from 1991, the year before the Premier League started, until 2020, Liverpool won 0 top flight titles. And that became sort of the story. 18 titles pre-Premier League, one of the premier franchises, a little bit like the Boston Red Sox, not 100 years, 30, but in that same vein, this team that for, at this point in time, 24 years, had shown up again and again and again just to fall on their face.
The crowd, and when things aren't going well, it's a very edgy crowd because we want this league title so much and because we're all so desperate to win the league now. It's been so many years. It's been much longer than we ever would have thought when we won our last one. And because that we're all so desperate, the crowd can get tense and then the players can start to feel tense as well.
How do you understand that you haven't? And it's been 20
years. They had been close in 2001 to 2002. They were top after 33 games, fell to Arsenal at the end of the season, ended up in second. In 2008-2009, they were in first 21 games into the season under legendary Champions League manager Rafa Benitez. They would end up second to Manchester United, another team in the Big Four. Yeah. And that brings us here to 2013-2014, the closest that Liverpool had been to winning a title in 24 years. Now, before I get into the details of the story, I want to tell you, because I mentioned before, why this is so important to me. In 2014, I am living in Brooklyn, New York, in a crummy apartment in Bedford-Stuyvesant with three of my roommates, one of which is my friend Dano, to bring him back. He's back. He's still my roommate years later. It's me and Dano and two other gentlemen, Adam and Eric. And we all loved the Premier League. We would wake up Saturday mornings early, even if we'd work late in the night, and we would be carousing very early in the morning. We'd go down to the English soccer bar down the road and we'd eat English breakfast and drink Bloody Marys and wear soccer kits and get in arguments with people with different kits on. It was quite a scene. It was something I had never experienced anywhere else. And because of this, there was this deep connection for all of us with our teams, Liverpool, Chelsea, Arsenal, Manchester United, the big, the four guys, four different teams. Now, I remember watching this game with my my good friend, Adam Goldstein. Shout out to Adam Goldstein. He's important because the game we'll be looking at today is Chelsea, Liverpool, April 27th, 2014, known as the Slip. And the only people watching this game are me and Adam with our Liverpool and Chelsea kits together. Bradel, I wanted to jump in here with you because before we get into the game itself, there was something we talked about beforehand. Liverpool is at this point in time 5 points ahead with about five, six games remaining. And in a huge game on April 13th, only 2 weeks beforehand, Liverpool defeated Manchester City 3-2. It was a stunning game, the game that seemingly put Liverpool in control.
That's weak from Company. Coutinho! Company's gift! Coutinho gobbled it up! Liverpool's to lose. 24 years since anything like this.
It was a three-team race, right? I mean, Chelsea was kind of there, too.
Kind of there.
So it was Chelsea, Manchester City, and Liverpool.
Yes.
And after this victory against Man City, that was in Liverpool at Anfield, Steven Gerrard, he was famously, well, kind of infamously, I suppose,
I guess I have to insert the audio here, don't I? This is where...
Yeah, you're...
This does not slip, man! Listen, man! This does not slip, man! Listen, listen! This is gone! We go not at all! Fucking insane! We go not yet, man! No!
Don't slip up. This quote
yes.
would come back to become the iconic trolling call, the tweet I saw a million times, the meme, the gif that was sent to me. It was the thing that other teams used as a cudgel for years to hit us with. Going into this game, Liverpool desperately need this win at home with two games remaining. They have a game next week against Crystal Palace and then one yep. more game remaining. I want to say against Norwich. I don't remember exactly.
It was Newcastle United.
Newcastle United. Thank you very much. So let's get into the game itself. And the best way to start mm-hmm. this is to highlight the characters of interest. I'm going to start with a few honorable mentions on this team. Number one, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention legendary Uruguayan striker Luis Suarez, who won the Golden yes. Boot for Liverpool this year. He had scored 31 goals at the time, the most in Liverpool team history until it was broken by Mo Salah. His strike partner was a guy named Daniel Sturridge, who also scored 21 goals that year as part of the triple S tandem with young Raheem Sterling, the three S's.
Okay.
And also it was the first season of young upstart Felipe Coutinho's career. So these okay. are all the guys who are sort of yeah. lurking around on the periphery on this team. But there are four characters we need to pay most attention to. Number one
yes.
is Liverpool manager Brendan Rodgers.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
How does it feel to be Liverpool manager?
I'm very proud. As you can imagine, I'm only the second Northern Ireland manager in the history of the club. Like I say, it's a club with a wonderful tradition. And I feel very blessed with the opportunity to, of course, manage the club.
12 or so days ago, according to what we heard...
Liverpool manager Brendan Rodgers was an upstart manager from Swansea City from 2010 to 2012. This was his first season at Liverpool.
Okay.
One thing you'll learn about Brendan Rodgers, if you look deep into his career, he starts seasons very strong, and they fall apart very quickly. It seems to be a recurring trend, although we didn't know this at the time. The other thing that Brendan Rodgers right. is known for is tiki-taka football. Tiki-taka, it is a takeaway on Spanish-style football, and all you need to know if you don't want to get into the specifics of soccer details is tiki-taka football is pass, 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 pass you to death, pass past the defender, pass past the goalie, pass it into the goalie, wait till everyone's dead, pass some more, and then keep passing. That's the whole game. You tire people okay. into submission. So passing, it's a very pass-heavy offense. Keep that in mind. The other manager is a guy named Jose Mourinho.
I'm sorry, I'm a bit arrogant. We have a top manager. Porto to win the Champions League has to beat Partizan Belgrade, Real Madrid, Marseille, Olympique Lyon, Manchester United. Again, please don't call me arrogant, because what I'm saying is true. I'm European champion, so I'm not one of the bottle. I think I'm a special one.
I love Jose Mourinho. I shouldn't. I know I shouldn't. I should hate his guts. He's one of the greatest managers of all time. He's yes. also a massive, massive douchebag, like a total jerk all the time.
He is.
He's a quote factory, one of the greatest defensive managers you'll ever see. And he also plays a style known as parking the bus. Have you ever heard of this?
No, I have not.
Okay. So what Jose Mourinho is best known for is a style of defense in soccer known as parking the bus. Parking the bus is essentially when you operate with almost 10 players behind the ball. You essentially keep one striker out top to sort of lurk around, and okay. everyone else sits as deep as possible behind the ball in possession. You park the bus in front of the goal that nobody can get past, parking the bus. The idea is there are very minimal risks, right? There's so few players committed forward that it's so hard to get the ball in between these small channels. And eventually the teams will get frustrated, try and do something, have a missed pass, and your striker will take it down and he'll score one goal and the game will end 1-0. That's every Jose Mourinho game. It was It was genius. It was frustrating. Jose Mourinho. And then the last two characters. One is a journeyman striker named Dembaba, who played for Belgium, England, China, Turkey. This was not like the highlight of his career. He'd sort of bounced around all over the place, but okay. A successful player. I would think somebody, I almost want to say like a Robert Ori type. Do you know what I'm saying? Okay. Like a guy who sort of bounced around and was impactful wherever he went. I don't know that you would think of him as like the top guy ever. He wasn't that good.
But no, I understand. Yeah, sure.
And I guess let's get to the main event. Steven.
Well, you take a tap in these circumstances. What you have seen is a Champions League strike as good as anything the competition has produced in this and many a season. Well, you don't need me to explain that.
Steven Gerrard is the captain of Liverpool football. He played 504 games for Liverpool, 120 goals in his career. That's pretty good. Not goal scoring, not necessarily his forte. Many people would say that Steven Gerrard was the greatest holding midfielder in the world. The thing that Steven Gerrard is best known for is his shooting ability, this amazing ability to fire, especially when he was young. And also a phenomenal passer, quarterback style, they would say. His beautiful long through balls over the top, a huge part of what would set Suarez and Sturridge forward on offense. Amazing.
So it's interesting that you say that, because I remember when I watched the Premier League, when I started to watch, and I knew that Steven Gerrard was the captain, was the man. Mm-hmm. And he is. He's exactly what you said. He's a precision passer, right? And it was a good scorer. But at this point in his career, he was more of a facilitator than he was a scorer, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, when you come into soccer late in life, like we both have, you take it for granted, right? You think passing, well, I mean, what's the big deal? They're just passing the ball to somebody, right? But when you see what you only notice it when they don't connect, right?
Yes.
I guess is my point. So he was not a flashy player by any sense of the imagination in watching him play, but he was just so precise.
I was trying to think of some sort of modern or American comparison to make with Gerrard for people who don't who wouldn't understand. The closest I could come up with was, so I have two choices here. One is for you, one is for you, and it's Ernie Banks, a guy who meant so much to his team, or like a Don Mattingly, a guy who is so important to his team, but is kind of also known for never really being able to win that championship, right? That's the thing that eluded him with this team. He couldn't bring the title with him, right? I think about that with Mattingly all the time. But a better comp, I would almost say, is a guy like Charles Barkley. Do you know what I mean? Okay. Like almost like a Barkley type. You wouldn't put him on the level of the best Premier League soccer players of all time. He's not Jordan, right? He's not that guy, right? He's not Ronaldo. But you can't deny that if rebounding equates to passing, he's the best rebounder in NBA history, right? Like that's how I sort of see it with the Barkley comparison.
Okay. Interesting. I guess, you know, when I think about it just quickly, I would think of somebody like John Stockton.
Stockton.
Is that a good?
Yeah.
Because he was obviously a facilitator.
That's probably better, actually.
We're comparing passing and assists in the same manner. But he could score, and he did score, but that wasn't his main purpose on the pitch or on the court for John Stockton.
So I'll just give you very quickly. These are all the things that Steven Gerrard did win while he was with Liverpool. So it's not like he was an absolute disaster, right? He won one Champions League, two FA Cups, two League Cups, one Community Shield, 2017 English Football Hall of Fame, 2021 Premier League Football Hall of Fame, 2005 UEFA Footballer of the Year in the year that he brought Liverpool to the Champions League. So there was a time, I would say the mid 2004, 5, 6, 7, where he was in the top cusp of players in the world. Yes. That period was short.
Andrei Shevchenko must score. He must score. There will be no second chances if Shevchenko misses. He saved it! The European Cup is returning to England and to Anfield. Liverpool are champions of Europe again.
it was, you know, and that's sort of where we need to talk about here, because by 2014, what you have is an old, slow, out of position player. And I mean that with as much respect as I could possibly have. I loved watching him play. But this was a man who was an attacking midfielder. And at 2014, he's playing holding defensive midfield. He is the last line of defense, right? Let's get into the game itself, because to be honest, there's not much to say. Going up into there's really not. Going into halftime, again, Jose Mourinho, the master of parking the bus, of maintaining ball control and maintaining safety, has turned this into a very dull, very slow, nil-nil game heading into halftime. But what you'll see is Liverpool center back, just before halftime, Mamadou Sakho, taking a back pass to Steven Gerrard. A pass he doesn't really need to make, but because Gerrard is so involved, so tied in to the passing and the story of this team, that they're getting him the ball almost at any opportunity.
Oh, and Gerrard has slipped, and Demba Ba is through here for Chelsea. It's Ba, he scores in front of the cop. Catastrophe for the Liverpool skipper. And Chelsea are back in the title race here. A gift of the cruelest type. That is horrible for Steven Gerrard. Your heart weeps for him.
It felt as though time stopped. When Gerrard slipped, and it is a slip, it's simply a guy trying his best and slipping, and that's it.
Yeah.
Demba Ba jumps on the ball, and you can almost see it. You can look at the moment that Gerrard realizes what has happened. And Gerrard gets up and he tries to chase down Demba Ba, but at this point in time, Demba Ba is way too fast and way too strong for old, out of position Gerrard to catch. There is no chance that anyone can stop this except Liverpool goalkeeper Simon Mignolet. And from what I remember about Simon Mignolet, I wasn't feeling very good about it. I didn't think he was going to stop it, and he certainly did not. When I say that my friend Adam, who is a classic ball buster, I love him to death. He would have given me a hard time over anything. We love to give each other a hard time. You know how young men living together in their 20s are. Yeah,
absolutely.
He earnestly looked at me and said, like, I'm so sorry. I'm disgusted. Like he knew in the moment. He's like, that was awful. This was like the worst thing I've ever seen. And I was like, thanks, man. He didn't want to celebrate. He didn't say anything. He sat there like in silence afterwards. He knew. And that moment sat there, and I just said, oh my God. But that was also the moment where I was like, I'm with this team, right? Like I know if they blow this, like there's still time, right? Like we're still going to find a way. I still believe that we would find a way. And as the rest of this game went on, and they did not find a way. Classic Jose Mourinho. There is no opportunity. If you're up 1-0, the game's over. And maybe I'm misremembering. It might have been at the end of the next game. But what I do remember is Gerrard essentially holding Luis Suarez, who is inconsolable in his grief and sadness. In my mind now, that's actually probably after the next game. But that's what I remember, right? This moment of inconsolable grief. Another time, another year that Liverpool came so close, to let it slip out of their grasp. I hate to use that pun over and over again. I do have a little bit of aftermath, but that is probably, that's really where this moment lives.
It's a brutal moment. You know, I would encourage everyone to take a look at it on YouTube. Obviously, you can search it up. But you're right. I can see where your friend would be like, I can't gloat about this.
I can't gloat
because it was because it was Gerrard, and it was just a slip that could have happened to anyone, right? Yeah. He didn't do anything wrong. He just slipped.
It was a horrible moment for Steven Gerrard. Do you have sympathy for him?
Of course, without a doubt. I think, you know, it can happen to any player. Stevie's a top player. Whether Liverpool go on to win the league or not, I don't think it takes anything off the player he is and has been, without a doubt. And he'll be low there, but he's been driving them all season. So, you know, what can you say? That it's just not a nice moment.
Now, it's important to know And you are right. This is not the last game of the season for Liverpool. There is still a chance that Liverpool will survive, but we know that doesn't happen. While they're still in striking distance in points, they are way behind Manchester City in goal differential. It's plus nine. So they need to... So for people who don't know what that means, they need to outscore their next two opponents by lots of points and hope that Man City doesn't, right?
And going Or Man City loses.
Or Man City loses, right? So going into their next game with Crystal Palace, they are leading this game 3-0. So now that's three off that goal differential. Now it's suddenly plus six, and Manchester City hasn't played yet. So this is a this is important.
Sure.
And now you're sort of thinking as a Liverpool fan, okay, we blew that one last week. Now we get back on track. Now we keep moving. We get a couple more goals in this game. What would happen is a young midfielder, Jordan Henderson, would come out of the game. He was not there. And as the game went on, Crystal Palace, as they've done over the years, a classic bugaboo team, a team that always haunts Liverpool every few years. You're always looking for a rogue Crystal Palace loss. Turned this 3-0 lead into a 3-3 draw, which I have to be honest, this one in hindsight was worse. I know it's not worse than the moment of the slip.
Right.
But giving away that 3-0, that was the one where the boys hit me with the don't let it slip cudgel. Now they were not being nice. The week before, Chelsea Liverpool were being gentle with Sam, but not against Crystal Palace. Oh, that was when I got it. Just real quickly, Manchester City would go on to win their final five games. This would be their second title in 3 years. They would win four more titles in the upcoming seasons, 18, 19, 21, and 22. So Liverpool's streak of no titles would go to 30 years. And that is where the story stops until we get to the very end. And I'll let you jump in here. What about this as someone who probably did you probably didn't watch this in real time, I would imagine.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
I know I was watching this team at that point, but I certainly, I don't know. I didn't see every match, but
you had like jobs and such.
Yeah. Those sort of things got in the way, but I don't remember. It's nothing that sticks out, but I was thinking about, other things that have happened in other games, other sports where it just, one play changes basically the season. And it's interesting with the Premier League and some of these other soccer leagues is they only have a season and they don't have a playoff, right? Which is completely different than American sports.
Which I hated, by the way. And now I kind of like, but I hated it at the time. I was like, this is so stupid. Yeah.
So for us to look at a regular season, it's a little more difficult because for all intents and purposes, these were playoff games, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when they're coming to the end of the season, these are all playoff games. But one that that sticks out to me that's similar and it was the Cubs in the 2003 NLCS against the Marlins.
That's awfully close to fan interference right there. The umpire's all over it. The umpire down there, Mike Everett's on the play. If a Lou has to reach into the stands, it's fair game for the fans to catch the ball. If the fan reaches out over the field, then it can be ruled fan interference. That is very, very
close. Now there was the famous Bartman incident, which is a whole different story.
Yeah.
But after that, Alex Gonzalez, the shortstop, booted a tailor-made double play that would have ended the eighth inning with the Cubs up 3-1. And they were up 3-2 in the series.
Yeah.
So they could have gone on to win that game, but he famously booted a tailor-made double play. And the reason why that resonates with me and reminds me so much of this is because I remember a Chicago sports announcer saying that when Alex Gonzalez was traded to the Cubs, it was the baseball winter meetings and he was there and Jim Fregosi was the then manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. And he asked Fregosi, well, what do you think about Alex Gonzalez? And his quote was, if you need one guy to have the ball hit to make a play in the seventh game of the World Series, he's the guy you want it hit to. So just because of the Girard speech and then of course it's hit right to Alex Gonzalez and he boots it and they end up losing. They still had a chance. They still had a seventh game, just like Liverpool still had a chance.
But, you know, and
they lost.
I think there's a couple other things I just want to discuss about Girard before I close out here, because, you know, Girard, there was a lot of talk that, you know, had they won this title, had they won in 2013, yeah. 2014, I do think that Girard retires. Do you know what I mean? I don't know that sure. he comes back for the 2014-2015 season if the season ends with them slaying the 24-year deal, okay. right? But he does come back in 2014-2015, and Liverpool kind of bombs out of the season. And when I say bomb out, I mean they end up in sixth. But considering that they were so close the year before, right. you know, this is also Luis Suarez got shipped out in this. In the meantime, he had been gone. You know, we overlooked the Luis Suarez bites people conversation that I didn't think about earlier on. Luis Suarez has a career and history of biting people. Yes. It's happened at least three times.
Oh, dear, dear, dear. Another look. It looks to me, dare I say it, that he's had a little bite at Chiellini.
Surely not again. Surely not again. The head certainly went in Chiellini's direction.
The two last games of the year, the 2014-2015 season, the last two games of Liverpool's, Steven Gerrard's Liverpool career.
Okay.
His last home game is a 3-1 loss to Crystal Palace, back again to ruin Gerrard's final game at Anfield the next week, away to Stoke City in his final Premier League game. Liverpool loses 6-1. It was awful. It was so disheartening. There was no, it felt like such an awful way for yeah. Gerrard to go out. Now, Gerrard would move on. He would never really play for another team in the Premier League. He did play one right. season with the LA Galaxy, weirdly enough. Mm-hmm. They also didn't win a title because apparently Gerrard's allergic to titles at this point
yes,
in time.
Yes.
So what would happen is Rodgers would get fired. Brendan Rodgers, manager, would get fired at the end of 2015. And he would be replaced by a gentleman named Jurgen Klopp, who, in response to Jose Mourinho once calling himself the special one, Jurgen Klopp introduced himself to Liverpool by calling himself the normal one.
Jose Mourinho, when he came to England for the first time, described himself as the special one. How would you describe yourself?
I don't want to describe myself. The only thing I can say, maybe I ask, does anybody in this room think that I can do wonder? No, so let me work. I'm a totally normal guy. I came from Blackpool.
And for a time, that was true. I do think that he is. I think that's a little untrue now.
Yeah, I think so.
There is a nice happy ending to this story. Of course, Liverpool would go on to break the Premier League title drought in 2020, 30 years on. The only downside for me is that that was the COVID season, so they really couldn't celebrate it. Like
I know. I know. Yeah.
But yeah, so that was the only real thing. And it's just a shame. I still, Gerrard, I guess, when I think about the end of it, I sort of think of him, and now as we're talking about it, it really does sort of solidify. I do sort of think of him as my Liverpool Don Mattingly, right? This iconic,
comparison.
This iconic character who was so important to this team and franchise from even before I started watching it, just this name.
Yeah.
I had the, you know, my dad gave me the card when I was a kid. I had the Mattingly card and carried it around with me, right? You know, he was that kind of player, especially, you know, Liverpool was not always good when Gerrard was there. So, you know, Mattingly famously was on a bunch of terrible Yankees teams.
Absolutely.
And for them to win that title right after Mattingly left always sort of made me feel like, poor guy. And with Liverpool, it's kind of the same thing. Like to see them win that title in 2020 was great. But God, I wish they could have just like brought Gerrard on as like an old man bench player to just sort of hang around.
Just to be there.
Yeah, just do a little ring chasing like in the NBA.
Yeah,
Randall, that's all I have for Steven Gerrard and Liverpool. Is there anything else you have? Oh, thank you.
No, I learned a lot.
Oh, that's good. Well, we were talking about it. Any other, what are there like, before we close out, I was trying to think of like other sort of like heartbreaking games, right? Like some sort of like moment. We were talking a bit about like the Red Sox. You were saying about the Cubs in 2003. 86 with the Red Sox, you know, everyone talks about that. That's Bill Buckner. But again, that's not the end of the World Series. There's
no,
another.
It's not. Yeah. Exactly. Same thing.
Yeah, same
thing. And that might even be, you know, because the Cubs one is overshadowed by the Bartman incident. So the 86 World Series might be a better analogy because it was just Bill Buckner.
With two out, 3-2 to Mookie Wilson. Little roller up along first, behind the bag, it gets through Buckner. Here comes Knight, and the Mets win it.
It was interesting. I did notice, and I don't know if you mentioned this or noticed it yourself, but Mo Salah was on the pitch that day for Chelsea.
That's a great point.
Now, obviously. Yeah.
That's a great point.
I didn't realize that till I was watching some of the highlights. And I'm like, wait a minute. There he is. He's right there. Yeah, he's celebrating the goal.
Yeah. Famously, Salah was a player that Mourinho did not like and did not figure out how to use. Salah would, if I remember correctly, I don't have my research on this, so I'm guessing. I want to say he left like the year after this to go to Roma in Italy, where he sort of made his name before coming back to Liverpool at essentially like one of the greatest deals they ever cut. Like Liverpool constantly overspends on players. Look at Darwin Nunez this year, but Salah was, again, that's a whole other episode, is what Salah did to Liverpool.
Still Salah gets his goal against Manchester United, seals all 3 points for Liverpool in their quest to win 30 years of...
Right, before I close out here, I just want to ask you sort of this question. I wonder sometimes whether soccer will ever really break into the mainstream of American sports. And I wonder sometimes if maybe it already has. And I just think, and I think there's more coming. Like, soccer is pretty mainstream now. Am I wrong?
No, I think it is. I think you're right.
Yeah.
I don't know that it doesn't get the hype and the play it does. The other sports do, right? I mean, I listen to sports radio every day. They don't talk about soccer.
No.
You kind of have to, it's a specialty show. It's a podcast. But you can find that info. It's just not going to be on your mainstream radio stations. But no, I think, especially with the younger generations, younger than us, right? Because soccer's played by, I think, more kids than any other sport in America. So, you know, more kids are playing soccer than baseball and football. So I think it's in the mainstream. We just don't notice.
With under a minute to go, I just want to shout out the YouTube channel In the Shadow of the Cop on NBC Sports, a wonderful series I watched to sort of help me. I'm going to try and leave with this quote before it goes out. People want to watch the real thing. This is from Soccernomics, the book. Global fans want global leagues. For most of them, that means the NBA, the NFL, and the Premier League. It's therefore wrong to imagine that David Beckham could save American soccer. American soccer is alive and well, and laying on the sofa watching Manchester United on NBC. My niece and nephew never played soccer, did they?
Yeah, Oliver played for one season.
Like AYSO, or did he play for a school?
No, it was like the park district, right? So yeah, he played 1 year, and you know, he knew that it wasn't for him after 1 year.
Well, you know, it's funny. We had around here when I was growing up, we had like AYSO, and I don't know how that translates to other regions. Sure. I don't know if it's just a New York thing, or I don't know how far AYSO soccer goes, but it was essentially like intramural soccer when you were a kid. You'd play like t-ball and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I played soccer as a little kid and full-on hated it. Like really, really, really hated it. Like just really? It was, oh my god, because it was so, because I didn't know what I was doing when you're a little kid. You ever watch little kids play soccer? It's unwatchable. It's awful. It's awful. No one knows what they're doing.
Everyone's running to the ball, running away from the, you know.
It's a big circle.
It is.
I went to see my other nieces and nephews years ago play a soccer game. And I don't know that I could ever have a kid who actively, like, really played soccer, because I was on the sidelines screaming, just yelling things that these kids didn't know what I'm talking about. I'm like, through ball, give them the through ball. And they're like, they don't, that doesn't mean anything to them. They're like, what?
Well, and you really question, because soccer is considered the beautiful game, right?
The beautiful game. Yes, it is very beautiful.
The beautiful game. When you watch kids ages, you know, 5 to 8 playing soccer, it is anything but beautiful. You're like, what? This isn't beautiful. This is just a mob just chasing after a ball.
Yeah. No rhyme or no reason. It's a big mess.
No.
I remember shout out, I don't remember his last name anymore, but we had this kid on my team. We were on the Aquamarine team, to show you what kind of names we had. It wasn't that you were Aquamarine. We had like one kid named Nate, and Nate, his parents must have been, I don't know, watching European soccer or something, because he knew what to do. So it was just like, well, if Nate scores 4 goals a game, we'll win. Otherwise, I'm going to stand in the goal and pretend that I'm a pterodactyl until the ball makes its way down toward me, and then I'm just going to miss it. Right? Like, that was pretty much my experience.
Right. Yeah, my lone experience was in high school, just playing in gym class. We had a foreign exchange student from Brazil.
Yep.
Who clearly, we thought, watching him play, we thought, oh, he's professional level soccer player. Cause you know, we're like, what is going on here? Huh. And he's probably, I don't even know if he was considered a good soccer player for his age in Brazil, but to us, it was like, what happened? Who got this? How did this kid end up in our school as a foreign exchange student? He's a professional soccer player.
Can I was thinking about this earlier. I think sometimes one of the things that, as I get older, a lot of the stuff about soccer that fascinates me is the stuff that I did not like when I was younger, right? Like, one of my biggest hurdles with soccer was, what? There's no playoffs? What's the point? Sure. Right? Why wouldn't they have a playoff system? And now I sort of like it. I kind of wish other leagues would just do this. I'm like, can we all have just like the regular season is the, I think it's the best regular season. And I also think that what's fascinating about soccer is it's kind of like college basketball, in the way that every country and every team kind of has their own like style and vibe. Like, if you're in the Champions League and you're an English team and you play an Italian team, their whole vibe is going to be different than anything you've ever seen, because Italian football is a little different than German football and French football. And people always ask me, as soccer fans, like, why isn't America good at soccer? Why aren't we as good? Sure. Because all the athletes we have who would be the best soccer players play for other teams. They play for like other professional sports.
Yeah, they do, for sure. Yeah, that's not the sport of choice for most of them, right?
You can't make money.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting that you say the no playoffs, right? Cause with the, you win the league. But at the same time, you know, that takes away from that tournament atmosphere at the end of the season, but soccer has other tournaments, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The Champions League and Europa and all that stuff, right? They have different tournaments.
Yeah. Yeah, their playoffs almost become the acceptance to go into a tournament the way the NCAA is. And it's sort of the same thing. Like, if you can get into the tournament, that's your playoff. What I think I like about the regular season of Premier League with no playoffs is it does mean that every single game becomes that much more important. And that's my other soccer buddy, Justin, shout out to Justin. He makes this college football soccer comparison all the time. He tends to think that college football is probably the closest analogy to how people watch soccer, how the games are played, how important they are, the way the scheduling is. And I think for a lot of American fans, there is an easy connection there to jump. If you like college football, the territoriality of it, the way that all of these teams are individual and different and have their own little histories. And I think there's something to that as well. That was a nice analogy for me years on.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense, because I mean, if you're from a certain area, you're rooting for that team, right? And that's very much what football is all about.
Well, that's the other thing. You know, if I knew lots of guys over the years who were from England, or, you know, came from the UK or from overseas, and I always ask them, you know, what team do you root for in, you know, in soccer? And a lot of times they're going to tell you like Millwall or, you know, some like the local team, right? Like, it's never Chelsea. It's never Tottenham, rarely, right? Unless they just happen to be from London. Like, a lot of these folks have a team that is rooted in where they're from. And I always think I was a little jealous of that. Like, I like the idea. Like, wouldn't it be cool if, like, the former Utica Blue Sox or, like, the Joliet Jackhammers could have made their way into Major League Baseball if they had worked their way up somehow? Like, that would have been great if they, like, no American sport would agree to it. No owner would ever.
There's too much money. It's the relegation system would never fly, though it should. I mean, especially if you look at Major League Baseball, right? Because you have these owners who don't spend any money, but yet they're still making money. And it's like, wow. Yeah. I mean, you know, but then again, this season, the beginning of this season, you've got the Pittsburgh Pirates who have the best record in the National League, and you would have thought they would have been relegated. So, you know, go figure.
Well, that's the other thing, too. You know, baseball is probably the only American sport that has the infrastructure in place to do a relegation system. Yeah. Like, you couldn't do it in the NBA because there's where would they go? There's one league. And I guess the G League.
The G League.
Yeah, you're going to bring a G League team up. Like, that's not how this is.
Right.
Baseball already has this single A, triple A, double A system that is essentially what the Premier League and English football system is. But again, the Yankees are never going to agree to a season where if they are bad enough that they get kicked out of Major League Baseball, it's just not happening.
Not going to happen.
Not now. It's too late now. Yeah. And also, to be fair, the big difference too, and I think a lot of people are learning this, watching this Welcome to Wrexham show. You know, these teams are independent. When you can't – a lot of these sports leagues own the teams, right? The teams are the property of – the National Hockey League or Major League Baseball, right? You couldn't take the Yankees and just remove them from Major League Baseball. There would be like a lawsuit, right?
Right.
If the English Premier League folded tomorrow, the system, all the teams are independently owned by either, you know, investors or just people who own the teams. It would still exist. It would move on in another form. People are connected to these teams and the history to them in a way that isn't transient. It represents maybe their entire community for the last 150 years for some of these teams.
Right. Well, yeah, that's the big difference between, you know, those this football worldwide than our sports here in America. Because that's not, you know, while, you know, we have teams that have been around for 100 years, it's not like that it's not the same. Because, you know, the same again with like these the teams in England, they have their academies, right? And they have players that come at a very young age and work their way through the academy. Then they might come to the big club, right?
Yeah.
They, you know, there's different age levels, and then of course there's the team. Or they might, you know, get transferred, right? So it's just different entirely.
Before we move out from soccer, because I have one last thing I want to ask you. I was thinking about this. Now, the answer for me is probably the Yankees, but I was thinking about the team that I root for that is probably the most hated by other groups of fans, right? The answer is the Yankees. Like, I like the Yankees, but I know the Yankees are villains.
Yeah.
I am under the impression that in England, everything I've read, if you're not a Liverpool fan, you not only dislike Liverpool, you hate Liverpool. I don't know that Liverpool is, but I think they're one of those teams that's very divisive in that way. Like, you're either, it's like the Red Sox, I think, are kind of in that way too. Like, a lot of people are just like, if you're not on board, everybody hates you.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, you're probably right, but I, you know, for your sports teams, because New York is hard.
New York's hard.
You know, everyone hates New York teams because they're usually good, right?
Yeah. Most of the time.
And they buy players and all this and that and the other over their history. The Yankees being the
prime culprit
example of that.
Yeah.
And now the Mets are doing the same thing. But if I were to pick a New York the team that you root for that I hate the most, it's the New York Knicks.
Really?
Because as a Chicago Bulls fan, I hate the New York Knicks. And I even... you know, I was watching the game the other day with the Heat game, and I was watching it, and I'm like, God, I still hate the Knicks.
I think it's I think for a lot of New York fans, that is part of the appeal, though, right? Like the idea that people don't like this team. They don't want to see us succeed. This is like, not for nothing, like Kevin's not here, so I can't call him out. Lakers fans do this all the time.
Yeah.
Lakers fans love that they are hated. They will be, they're so excited that you hate them. They can't wait to talk about how much you hate them and how much they win. They love it. It's their favorite thing. The Knicks, I think, interestingly, are a, I think they're on the up nationally right now. Even though Stephen A. Smith is doing everything he can to remove that joy, because every time I see him on TV, I sort of hate the Knicks. I'm like, oh, God, Stephen A., just shut up. I can't take it. It's so performative. But I think that's interesting. I think for me, I'm trying to think of your teams. See, I think the Bulls are probably the team that I'm the most interested in of the Chicago teams. Because of the Jordan thing, because I love basketball. It reminds me of old school. I think I've always kind of struggled with the Bears, because I like the Cubbies and I like the White Sox, and I always thought the Blackhawks had like dope jerseys and were always fine. But like, I don't know, the Bears thing, I never liked any of those NFC East teams. It was kind of hard for me to be excited. I didn't like the Packers. I mean, I root for the Bears sometimes solely for you. Like if I'm watching a Bears game and they're playing the Packers, I'm like, man, I hope the Bears win so Randall doesn't have to watch the Packers win, right? Like that's
a little bit of joy. Yeah.
But I don't think Chicago has that same, I think Chicago as in general compared to New York has a bit of a more underdog positivity vibe than New York does.
I think so. For the most part, you're probably right. Though I know there's a lot of people that don't like the Cubs, but I don't know that it ever gets to the level of a Yankee, you know, hate.
See, I feel
by
like
any
the Cubs
stretch of the imagination.
From the outside looking in, I feel like the Cubs feel like they would be the most beloved of all the Chicago teams.
Well, yeah, you could be. I don't know. You know, that's an interesting question, because the Bears, obviously, they probably have their detractors as well. I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know.
I mean,
I don't know who would be the most hated.
If I was trying to remove my personal connections to it, if I'm looking from the outside in toward Chicago, I would think, okay, Cubs and the Bears are the most important teams, and the Bulls are probably the team that could be, but they're not as relevant as they were when they were at their height.
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes forget that the White Sox exist.
So does Chicago.
Yeah, I kind of feel, and maybe that plays to their advantage a little bit, but I feel like the White Sox are the forgotten team. And then,
the Blackhawks are, even with the Blackhawks, when they're good, I watch them.
Yeah.
And when they're not, I don't. I'm not, you know, you and I are not the biggest hockey fans.
No.
But not that I don't enjoy watching a hockey game, but it's just not, it's not number one on my radar.
I will say, for years, I have had, for whatever reason, I got it at like a thrift store. I have this Florida Panthers clock that it doesn't say Florida Panthers. It just has like the leaping panther on the clock. So I'm like, hey, this is kind of funny. So for over the years, I've already sort of casually sort of paid attention to the Florida Panthers. Like, hey, Florida Panthers. And then I just saw this week they beat the greatest regular season team in NHL history by defeating the Boston Bruins. And
I was gonna talk about that today. I mean, that's a huge story, right? I mean, we're a sports history podcast. The Bruins were making history. They made history. Best regular season ever. And then they go up 3-1 in the series and end up losing at home in overtime. Wow.
And I feel like this is what stopped me from ever being a real, my real potential from being a sports broadcaster is when I saw it, I was like, good. I was like, good. take that, Boston. You don't deserve it. The other thing I wanted to bring up, because it is this week before we run out of time here.
Sure.
I really tried. I tried my best on Thursday to pay attention and watch the NFL draft. And it is absolutely the single worst piece of sports content on television. I can't take it. It's awful. Thoughts?
Yeah, I only lasted until the Bears draft pick, and barely lasted that long, because they ended up, I was mad that they traded the pick, only because that meant I had to watch longer.
Yeah.
Not because of the trade itself, not because of who they ended up getting, but just because I'm like, oh, and I have to watch for another 10-20 minutes. It's brutal, but there are people that love it. And I used to love it. Did you?
I used to love it because I used to care more about college sports and I used to know all the players. I was like, ooh, this guy, I want this guy to go to the Bills.
Okay.
Now I was just kind of like, My buddy said it to me, and he's not a football fan. My buddy Kevin, shout out to Kevin. He said, you know what they should just do is just post a list, like in college when you get a test. Just walk up. Goodell should just walk up to a wall and put up a list with tape, and everyone should run to the wall and look at the list and go, ooh, what number was it? Where's everyone at? I would prefer that, I think. It's just, it's all the mechanics of it taking like 10 minutes. Like, I don't understand. Why does the first team, you have the number one pick, there's nobody ahead of you. You should be out there immediately being like, hey, we're taking whoever who went number Andrew Luck. I can't think of a number one pick from right now.
It was it was Bryce Young, right?
Bryce Young, the world's smallest quarterback. Yeah, it's gonna be amazing.
You're right. They're all of a sudden they're on the clock. You're like, how are they on the clock? They've been on the clock for months.
And I gotta give my other buddy who is here credit. You ever watch a draft with like other people? Like in a group of guys or a couple of people hanging out watching.
Probably.
The draft.
Yeah. So not in a while, but
if you ever done this, folks, there's always one guy who apparently is the king of drafts and knows every pick and how every pick is wrong. Like, I think I went through 15 picks before I got to a pick where he's like, that one wasn't bad. I was like, really? You finally got one you liked down here? Pick 7. Every pick was wrong from 1 to 15. Like, I was like, okay, man, I don't. So yeah.
Well, NFL. Yeah, and the whole thing about the draft is, you know, it's so overanalyzed. I mean, there's always these mock drafts, and then they talk about each pick as it's happening. And the reality is, you don't know for 2 or 3 years if those are good picks or bad.
No, the highlight for me was the Bills drafting Dalton Kincaid, simply because I think I saw somebody say that best 80s movie villain name of any person in the history of the world. Oh my God, Dalton Kincaid is coming.
Yes.
Like, amazing. Like, unreal.
Absolutely.
I will say, though, I'm a little sad. This is getting to sort of the down part of the sports year for me, when soon it's going to be just baseball. I'm going to have to fully invest in baseball because soccer ends in the next couple of weeks. We're like a month away. NBA is going to be done in
You've got a couple
weeks.
Months yet, right? I mean, you've still got three series.
The Knicks might not.
Not the Knicks. I see
the Knicks
what you're
might
saying.
Be done. They might be done. And then I'm going to be, and we're pretty far out from the NFL. So we'll just have to start making more content, I guess.